This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
Final seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
From the Quicken Loan Studios in Houston, Texas. Quicken Loans. Take advantage of historic low rates. Go to Rocket Mortgage today. Here's your host, 6'1", former Oklahoma Sooner basketball player, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker Campbell, welcome back to hour number two at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show as we are inside the Quicken Loan Studios on this Friday night. And I always look forward to our next guest. We always have a compelling conversation. And tonight we've got a variety of subjects that we're going to dive into. But first and foremost, we're going to continue to celebrate the amazing achievement and milestone for the UConn women's basketball team. As of course, last week they won their 100th straight game. True pleasure to have back with us at SB Nation Radio on the Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. That is the great Christine Brennan of USA Today, national sports columnist. Good evening, Christine.
Hey, Alyssa, how are you? It's great to be with you again.
Wonderful to have you on, first time in 2017. And yeah. Let's talk about the UConn women's basketball team. Of course, they just had an impressive win over Temple for their 102nd straight win on Wednesday night. Just they have such an incredible legacy on and off the court. Talk to me about as far as what do you think has been the key to their dominance? Because they have not lost a game since November of 2014, and I believe it was against Stanford in a double overtime.
That's right, and no one saw this one coming. I mean, they lost Brianna Stewart, two other great players, who were the top three draft picks in the WNBA draft. So everyone thought, well, this will be the year to catch Connecticut. This is the down year. This is the year they're going to have to rebuild. Uh-huh. Well, they didn't rebuild. They reloaded. And no one saw it coming. And the fact that they're undefeated, they're playing everybody, which is a great thing about Gino Auriemma and his staff and their team. They shy away from no one. Sometimes you see in men's basketball, people avoid each other, rivalries, et cetera. Well, they don't in women's hoops, certainly not at UConn. And they've taken on all comers, and Maryland gave them a great game. And they've had, one other close game. And, well, then the other day they had one. But in general, they have been beating everyone. I think 98 of the 100 were by double digits. And so what is it? What is it? Well, it's actually kind of mind-boggling to me as an observer of sports all these years. When you consider it, Gino Auriemma and his staff only get to have 12 players. Mm-hmm. And today is the greatest day in women's sports until tomorrow. So by that I mean that today is the most competitive, well-coached, well-trained, parent interest, scholarships available day in women's and girls' sports until tomorrow. And so the fact that Gino, who only gets 12 players, can't stockpile 100 in a gym and stores and pull them out individually, only gets 12, and today's the greatest day ever in women's basketball, it is really mind-boggling to me how he continues to do this, because that means there are 12 great players at Baylor and 12 great players at Maryland and 12 great players at Stanford and all around the country. And Ohio State just beat Maryland. So you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And like, how is it possible that at this time they can be so dominant at such a competitive time? And that's a question more than an answer for me, because I got to admit, I don't get it. But it's obviously the system. It's obviously Gino. The top players want to play for him. And then he makes them cogs in a machine. He demands that they be teammates. They can't be superstars. But again, it still defies logic that at this time, 2017, 45 years into Title IX, there would be one team that could be this dominant, because there's just too much great talent all around the country.
You know, Christine, last week in our program, we talked about this as far as the versatility in the type of players that he is recruiting. Do you find a common denominator of these 12 players each and every year that he is going after, securing and bringing into the program, and then they are able to maximize their talent and able to flourish?
Absolutely. I mean, he's bringing in, of course, the best. I mean, or some of the best. Obviously, a couple of the All-Americans, high school Americans, go elsewhere, but they want to play for him. In a way, it would be reminiscent. I hate when we have to use men's sports as a comparison, but for this particular piece of the conversation, in a way, it's a bit like what Calipari does at Kentucky.
Okay.
In this one sense, that these great players all want to come together and play. Now, that's where the comparison ends, because the UConn women all graduate, and they are all going to be amazing, productive members of the UConn culture and community, and hopefully the world at large for decades to come. I'm not saying the Kentucky men are not, but they're one and done, a lot of them, most of them, and I don't see them as being the productive community leaders at Kentucky, because they're already gone. So that's where the comparison changes. At UConn, they are student-athletes, and we should be praising women's sports and women's basketball. Those people out there who still hate it or don't like it or poo-poo it, I don't know what they're thinking, because these are the role models, not just for our daughters, but our sons, these women athletes. But, yeah, they great players want to come there, want to be part of a winning tradition, and it just builds. Again, though, it defies logic that he's doing it, that Gino Auriemma is doing it this year. It just absolutely defies logic. Great players, clearly. But we'll see if maybe someone can give him a little run in the women's Final Four. I wouldn't be entirely shocked if that happened. Not necessarily beat them, but have it be a really close game. I'm hoping that that's the case, just for the pure fun of it all.
USA Today columnist, ABC News, CNN, PBS, and NPR commentator Christine Brennan is with us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. We'd love to hear from you. Chime in on this conversation. You can join us at Twitter at eRadioSports, and always go back and listen to our entire conversation at podcastarena.com. Where can our listeners connect with you, Christine?
Yeah, certainly on Twitter at C Brennan Sports. So first initial, last name, Sports, at C Brennan Sports. Facebook, also, my Facebook page is public, and that's Christine Brennan, or I think it's at C Brennan Sports as well, to try to locate it, but shouldn't be hard. And also my website is ChristineBrennan.com, and people, students especially, I set up a student tab specifically for those students. I do more mentoring than anything else these days, Alyssa. And students can go to my website, ChristineBrennan.com, go to that student tab, find several videos where you'll see not only myself, but also Leslie Visser and Rachel Nichols and Pam Oliver talking about our careers. All of that's available on ChristineBrennan.com, as well as the way to email me and other info about my books and anything else that people might want to know or not about about me or my career.
I'd love for you to talk about, you know, as we continue to our conversation about the UConn women's basketball program, has the success of this program, has it helped or has it hurt basketball? You hear this many times. I mean, does this type of dominance hurt the competition? What do you think?
Well, it's a great question, and I think it's a little of both. I really do. I think, to be honest, you have to say that. What's great about it is, of course, dominance, as you said. Rock stars in sports. We love dominant teams. You know, everyone's hoping in Chicago that the Cubs can now become a dominant force in the National League and winning more World Series. Certainly when the New York Yankees were at their heyday, Yankees fans love that, and some in the nation. The Dallas Cowboys have a national following in large part because of their dominance many years ago. So that Tiger Woods, Michael Jordan, Michael Phelps, Katie Ledecky, Simone Biles, the dominant athlete, we love that. So there's that piece of it. And just as UCLA men were a big part of the conversation in the 60s and 70s, winning and winning and winning, you know, that was a really big moment in men's basketball, which might have been the equivalent moment now for women's basketball, where teams started to say, hey, we got to beat this team. And so that's all for the good. Just the milestone of 100 is remarkable, and it got so much attention for UConn and what they're doing in that program, and then, of course, throughout women's basketball and women's sports. The downside is that they're doing that. And as I said earlier, you know, the notion that here we are 45 years into Title IX, signed by Richard Nixon in June of 72, I think the most important law in our country the last 45 years, and I know that's saying something, but empowering girls and women, not just on the playing field, but in every way in their lives once they played sports, to learn how to win and learn how to lose at a young age, teamwork, sportsmanship, et cetera, and making great leaders for our country and wonderful people in our neighborhoods and business leaders and politicians and presidents, hopefully someday, et cetera, et cetera. So with all of that, you know, when you think about it all, then how is it possible that there's one team that's so dominant? And it almost makes it like, oh, I don't even need to watch because UConn's so dominant. So do people turn on the TV and watch because UConn is just going to kill somebody? Or do you go, you know, this is boring, I know who's going to win? And therein lies the dilemma. And I think anyone who's covering this, anyone who is an observer, like myself, like you, we should definitely point out both sides, because, as I said, it is surprising to me that UConn is this dominant, and I wonder why that is. And I think that there is a negative in the sense that people say, it's just not going to be competitive. But if, when and if it becomes competitive, then that everyone will tune in and people will, that will certainly get people's attention.
Okay, so how do we replicate this type of success? How do other teams get to this level? And do you think that there ever will be parity in women's basketball? I miss those days of Tennessee and Texas and the good old days of the 80s and the 90s.
Yeah, you know, I think it's going to take a few more years. I don't think it's going to be that much longer. I just cannot see UConn doing this kind of domination 5 years from now.
Hey, the conversation continues with Christine Brennan from USA Today after this quick timeout.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Welcome inside the Quicken Loans studios at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell, and the conversation continues with USA Today columnist Christine Brennan. You just mentioned Gino Auriemma, and it truly has been. It's been amazing to watch this incredible run. You know, he's in his, what, early 60s. I believe he's 62. And I understand that he's got a new contract perhaps on the table, another 5 years, close to $13 million. I mean, that is incredible. How much longer do you think he's going to stay in the game? And also, all the years that you have covered UConn women's basketball, did he ever express a desire to want to go to the men? I mean, is that a fair question to ask?
Oh, it sure is a fair question to ask. Absolutely. And I think you do a great job in men's basketball. I know Gino, but I don't know him that well. So I don't know if he's ever harbored some great desire. I think that he's so happy where he is, that people have asked him over the years. And I think he knows that he would be good at it and could do it if he wanted. But I also think he's in the perfect place for him. And I can't imagine that he would want to make any kind of move now. Pat Summitt got a lot of those questions, the late, great Pat
right.
Summitt. And,
yes.
And again, I think, you know, I think there's something to be said for just being great where you are. And it's a different game for the men, and it's the same game as the men. And again, I think it can be a lot of fun to watch, and it's got a great following. It's got a following that's better than ever before. And there are the naysayers and the Neanderthals out there who say, oh, women's basketball is not the same. Well, you know what? There's 360 million people in this country. There's plenty of people who can like all these things. And this will be my annual plea that we call it the men's Final Four,
uh-huh.
because that pesky adjective men's basketball, because it's not real basketball and then women's. It is the men's game and the women's game. And the NCAA, shame on the NCAA for still having that logo say Final Four. Shame on them as the stewards of the game for not adding the word men's and changing the trademark if they have to and the logo. And also, let's get rid of that word lady. I've talked to Kim Mulkey about it.
Oh, yeah, Lady Bears. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's ridiculous. it's ridiculous. Are you a lady announcer? Am I a lady journalist? Is your producer a gentleman producer?
Uh-huh.
This is ridiculous. Kim, if you're listening, enough. It's 2017. You're doing more harm than good. And Tennessee, same thing. Lady Vols, preposterous. You don't call them the gentleman Vols. It mattered and was important when they wanted to differentiate early on. When they started, I get that, and it was a great brand. It is time. It is past time. The Northwestern Wildcats are the Wildcats we were in the late 70s. We are now. Please, folks, never, ever add the word lady to any of these. And if you're talking about Tennessee or Baylor, get rid of the lady and encourage your coaches to cut it out, because it's demeaning to the women at this point in the game.
Hey, we love when she's on the show. She's fired up. Christine Brennan, USA Today columnist tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We continue talking about women's basketball. How far has it come throughout the years, though, and evolved?
Oh, I think it's come a long way. I remember covering my first women's Final Four was out in L.A. Actually, Dawn Staley was playing
for Virginia back then.
Yeah, Tara Vanderveer was coaching at Stanford, as she is now. And, you know, there's a lot of rolling around on the floor chasing loose balls. And I think people know what I'm talking about. And it was not a particularly attractive game from the standpoint. I'm not talking about players' looks. I'm talking about the style of play. I mean, it wasn't bad. It was better than it had been before. But it was just there was a lot of that. There's not any of that now. And that's what, again, the naysayers and I don't know what their problem is, the people who I guess hate Title IX, and I think there's probably three of them left in the nation. They're hiding under a desk in Montana somewhere. Come on out, guys. Come on out. It's okay. But these people who want to just trash women's basketball or women's sports, which is mostly shock jock, you know, radio shows where they're talking to their 10 friends or something. I don't know who they're talking to. but they're certainly not talking to women and girls or boys who are raised in a way of respecting women. And the game is just so much better now. So I think it's great. Everyone says there should be more dunking. I think there will be. I don't know that I need to see more dunking, but I understand that comment for sure. But it's different, and the visual can be a difficult thing. The visual comparison for men and women's basketball, that's very different from, say, tennis. You know, you don't think of Serena. Well, first of all, Serena hits the ball harder than a lot of men, but you don't think of Serena Williams as being weaker than the men. Even though the men's game is different than the women's game in tennis, but we like the women's game more because the Americans win. Well, the Williams sisters equal the entire Americans. So, you know, there's that. Golf, you don't think about the fact that they're up a little bit on the tees, although they're still hitting the ball farther than 98% of men, just not the PGA Tour pros, the LPGA players. You know, figure skating, gymnastics. We look at women there as the stars, not the men. And so I think that's those are traditionally anyway. Swimming, you don't think of Katie Ledecky as a slower swimmer than Michael Phelps, right? Even though she is. Why would you ever even say those words? Because she's so dominant and great in what she does. So the visual for Katie Ledecky is great. The visual for women's basketball is a little tough because we compare it to the men's, and I wish we'd stop doing that. But I think that's part of the issue still moving forward. But again, the women's game is better than it's been, and the fan interest is also better than it's been. And that's, you know, the glass is half full. It's moving forward. It doesn't happen overnight, and it's okay. But I watch it at the 12, 13-year-old girl level, at the AAU level, and it is spectacular, and they love it, and they care just as much as their brothers, guaranteed on that point.
Okay, so let's shift gears. One of the topics I wanted to get into is Jameis Winston. He's a young man that needs to be a little bit more selective with his words. You want to weigh in on that and what he had to share with the third graders. Why was he picked in the first place?
Well, first of all, what is that school doing bringing Jameis Winston in to talk to third graders?
Right.
Shame on that school. Those kids are going to Google Jameis Winston. We know that Jameis Winston was involved in an alleged rape. Mm. And I'll say alleged rape because that's, you know, I guess, you know, we'll never know for sure, although I think most of us know or can guess, let's say that. As a journalist, we can guess. We're human beings. And for 11 months, Florida State covered it up, didn't investigate it. So, of course, it's alleged because by that time everything had grown cold, the trails and all of the investigations. And so Jameis Winston is one of the last people I would ever pick to speak to students now. Yes, he's a quarterback in the NFL. I don't care. Look at his record. Look at what he's done. Mm-hmm. So shame on that school. Shame on that school for bringing him in. Of all the Tampa Bay Bucks, of all the people they could have picked, I mean, just again, that's just stunning abdication of duty by those teachers and administrators and the principal, whoever made the decision.
We are getting ready to wrap up our time with Christine Brennan, USA Today columnist, tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And we just wrapped up. It's been a big month here in Houston, Super Bowl 51. Give us just your takeaways from that epic comeback and just incredible game.
Yeah, and the last thing on Jameis is, of course, what he was saying about girls. Oh, shame on him on that.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, Jameis. He should have a full apology on that. Girls have every right to stand up just like boys, even more so probably, in our wonderful 21st century world. Super Bowl was great. Great game. Houston did a wonderful job, loved it, and there was a lot going on that week, which is usually the complaint, that there's not much happening, and then you have a game, you know, a week of nothing. But there were some issues and some good stories, and I got a chance to talk to Bill Belichick for a pen pal column. Bill Belichick, my pen pal, folks can find that.
That is a great column. I love that, yes.
And lots of fun, and then an amazing game, although Atlanta, 1st and 10 on the 22. I don't know why they weren't setting up for a field goal as opposed to doing what they did. But the Patriots, incredible story, and Tom Brady, the greatest of all time. There's no way to say it any other way than that.
Hey, she is incredible. Christine Brennan, check her out. USA Today columnist. Always a true pleasure to have you on our program and here at our network at SB Nation Radio. Thank you so much, Christine.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. Take care.
Of course, you bet. Much more coming your way right here at hour number two at SB Nation Radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker Campbell, welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. Well, right now in our next segment, it is time to pack our bags. We're going to head to Boston. We are going to zero in on the New England Patriots and the Super Bowl 51 champions. We're going to find out what is on the horizon, what is next in 2017. And we are delighted to have with us for the very first time from the Boston Globe, he is the Patriots beat writer, and that is Jim McBride. And he is joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. Good evening, Jim.
Good evening. Thanks for having me. Nice to talk to the people in Houston again.
Absolutely. Well, you were down here for 10 days, and I know the weather was absolutely perfect. Give us your takeaways from a historic game, but just, you know, what a memorable Super Bowl. I know you've covered a lot of them.
Well, just, you know, we thought 2 years ago when they beat Seattle on that dramatic interception, buzzer was the ultimate, but this game even topped it. I mean, this is not only the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history, but probably the greatest comeback in New England sports history. You know, I think only the 2004 Red Sox beating the Yankees after being down 3-0 could compare. But I think this even tops that, especially with the growing popularity of the Patriots in the last 15 years in the region.
You know, Jim, yes, you're right. I mean, the greatest comeback perhaps in NFL playoff history. But when you step back now that you're back home, I mean, what was your biggest takeaway from this particular Super Bowl?
Well, I think it was the fact that everyone, including most of the people in the press box, thought the game was over at halftime. But the Patriots didn't. And I think that a lot of people point to Dante Hightower's strip sack in the fourth quarter as kind of the turning point.
Oh,
but
yeah, okay.
I go back to a play earlier in the first play of the second half when Hightower actually dropped Freeman for a four-yard loss. And I thought to myself at that time, you know, these guys certainly don't think this is over. And, you know, that's when I thought, well, this could end up being a game.
Hey, Jim McBride is with us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He is with the Boston Globe. In fact, he's been there 28 years. He is the Patriots beat writer. And so you spend time around Tom Brady. Okay, tell us about this guy. Tell us something that perhaps our listeners, we don't know about Tom Brady. And truly, how much longer? He's like a fine wine. He just gets better with time, better looking too, I might say. So how much longer is he going to still be in the game? Will he be in the huddle?
Well, you know, I think that he takes such good care of his body, and he has, you know, kind of a team of experts that kind of help him out. He's got his own recovery center up here in Foxborough that's kind of adjacent to the stadium, the TB12 Center. And, you know, he really believes in his workout regimen, which is not really muscle building, but it's more pliability. And, you know, he looks thinner and in better shape now than he did even, you know, a couple years ago. His play hasn't dropped off at all. So I certainly wouldn't bet against him playing at least another 3 years. I know he wants to play till he's 45, but it's been done in the NFL. I know Warren Moon played into his mid-40s, but, you know, who'd bet against this guy at this point? He's like a fine wine. He just keeps getting better every year. I think something that maybe your listeners wouldn't know about Tom is that we can get kind of a good read on Tom on Wednesdays is the day we get to talk to him. He holds his press conference, and you can tell by his demeanor in that press conference and the length of that press conference how the week of practice has been going. If he's there and he's engaging and he's ready to talk for, you know, an extended period of time, you feel pretty good about how the preparation is going. If it's a quick, you know, two or three question press conference, well, then you think he's not happy with either himself or his teammates, and he wants to get right back to that meeting room or the practice field and get whatever he doesn't feel is right worked out.
Well, while we've got you on the show tonight, I'd love for you to give us an update on this missing Super Bowl jersey. They're saying the value, the worth, Jim, is close to $500,000. I mean, what about the suspect board that Tom Brady unveiled?
Yeah, you know, he's become quite the social media guy the last two seasons. You know, during the height of the Deflategate, really the only time we ever got any information out of Tom was a Facebook posting or something like that. But, you know, he's become really funny on Facebook, very engaging with his audience. that post board yesterday was pretty funny. I find the reports about the jersey being worth up to $500,000. I don't know, it's kind of funny to me because it seems to me that who's going to pay that price, because Where could you exhibit it? It's almost like stealing a painting, you know, a Rembrandt or something. Once you steal it, there's really no way you can put it without people finding out that you have it, unless you're one of those people that want to hang it up on your wall and be the only person that ever looks at it. So, I don't know. I think that price kind of kind of blows my mind. But I think at some point somebody's going to turn that jersey in.
What do you think happened? And perhaps, I mean, do you have a theory? Who do you think stole the jersey?
Well, it's funny. The locker room atmosphere after most games is pretty casual, and you know most of the people that are in there because you see them all the time. But after the Super Bowl, it was just so much more crowded. And I know, like, the reports lately have said that someone lifted it out of his locker, but I remember that night he had said that he remembers putting it in his bag. So somebody would have had to go through the extraordinary step of going through his bag and taking it out, which led me to believe at the time that maybe it was a worker who was trying to make sure it was safe somewhere. But obviously that's not the case, because that would have come out by now. But I would think with the number of cameras and NFL films and the network that were in there, that somebody would have some kind of piece of tape watching somebody lift that jersey, which, you know, mm-hmm. It comes as a surprise to me that nobody's come up with some kind of evidence like that.
Okay, you're listening to The Voice. Jim McBride, Patriots beat writer with the Boston Globe. He is joining us tonight on the Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. And, of course, he's with us right here at SB Nation Radio. Another quick question about Tom Brady. Give us the pulse on how his mom is doing. And can you share a little bit about that as far as, you know, not a lot of details have seemed to come out about that as far as her illness.
Yeah, we didn't find out about her illness really. I mean, we had some hints during the season. I know during October when the Breast Cancer Awareness Month that Tom and Rob Gronkowski had done a few appearances with some people, some survivors that had been at Gillette Stadium, and he had hinted that, you know, maybe something wasn't quite right at home, but nobody really made that leap until Super Bowl week, when he kind of kind of let the news out there, and his father kind of confirmed it. And I think by the fact that he let it be known that she played golf recently and that she did make it to Houston for the game has to be seen as a positive sign. But I don't have any real update on it, because he's such a private person, and I think the family is pretty private, that they haven't really let too much news other than that, you know, that they were happy to have her at the game. And, you know, I'm sure everybody saw the film of her hugging Tom after the game. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, he's quite an emotional guy, especially when it comes to his family.
Hey, Jim McBride with us a few more minutes at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. One of the reasons we extended an invitation to with him tonight is because the Boston Globe teed up with our good friends at Triumph Books, and they have released this new slick commemorative book on the New England Patriots championship season. What can our listeners, they go out, they go online, get a copy of it, what can they expect when they open it up?
Yeah, it's cleverly titled Roger That, which, you know, I think everyone can draw their own conclusions there. It's, you know, it's a nice, shiny commemorative book. It's full of stories from the season, from the Super Bowl, not only by myself, but my colleagues, Ben Volen, Dan Shaughnessy, Chris Gasper, and the award-winning Globe photography staff. Really makes the book look really shiny. And, you know, for any Patriots fan or any, you know, Super Bowl collector, it's a pretty nice souvenir.
Okay, so as we look ahead in 2017, what does the future hold for the Patriots? What kind of moves do you anticipate are going to take place? Some of those main objectives in the offseason.
Yeah, I think priority number one is getting Dante Hightower signed to a long-term contract. You know, he's really the leader on defense, kind of the quarterback, if you will. He wears the green dot. He gets all the other guys in line, and he's just he's very smart. He's kind of a three-down linebacker, although they did scale back his use somewhat this year because he was nursing a knee injury most of the season. But he can rush the passer. He can set the edge. He can even drop back in coverage on occasion to cover backs out of the backfield. But I think the most important thing about this guy is that he's a leader and he's clutch. You know, he had the play before the play against Seattle, you know, stopping Marshawn Lynch at the one in Super Bowl 49 before Malcolm Butler made his dramatic interception, and he made the two real big key defensive stops in the Super Bowl win a few weeks ago down in Houston with the strip sack of Matt Ryan. So I think getting him under contract, whether it's the franchise tag or more likely a long term deal, is probably priority number one. Followed quickly by getting Malcolm Butler a new contract.
Okay,
you know,
yeah.
He was an undrafted free agent, so he's restricted right now, so the Patriots can match any offer. But I think ideally they'd like to get him and maybe a couple of their own free agents under contract before they go looking to fill some holes with some outside guys.
Hey, we're talking about the Super Bowl 51 champs in the New England Patriots with Jim McBride from the Boston Globe. We will be right back after this quick timeout.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell, and we are zeroing in on the New England Patriots with Jim McBride from the Boston Globe. Okay, so do you think the Patriots, they are built to repeat and that they can win back-to-back Super Bowls? What do you say, Jim?
Yeah, I think they're in a really good position. You know, they've got about $60 to $65 million in cap space, which is going to allow them to sign, you know, some key free agents their own and maybe some others. They've got some extra draft picks from the guys they traded away, especially Jamie Collins, arguably their best defensive player this year, and they traded him away and got a third-round draft pick from Cleveland. They've got a first-round pick this year, which, you know, they had to forfeit last year for the Deflategate penalty. So I think the overall, you know, the, with the draft picks, with the solid nucleus in place, and they still get that number 12 under center, so that gives them an edge on just about everybody.
What do you think the future is for Garoppolo? What's his destination? Where's he going to be ultimately?
Well, I do know this. The Patriots love him, and they love his work ethic, and they love what they've seen on the field from him so far, not only during games, which has, you know, been a pretty brief glimpse, but they love the way this kid works the scout team during the week. He's an underrated athlete. He's able to mimic the opposing quarterback every week, whether it be a mobile guy like Russell Wilson or more of a pocket passer like Matt Ryan. He does a great job of giving the defense a great look for the scout team. So they find there's a lot of value in Jimmy Garoppolo, and, you know, they really like him. So I think that their druthers would be to keep him, but I think if they get bowled over, you know, they're going to have to listen to offers because at the end of next year, he could walk free for no compensation. So, you know, I think that, you know, in an ideal world, they'd love to keep this guy as an insurance policy, but they also know that, you know, this team's out there desperate for a quarterback. And I think if Jimmy was coming out this year, he'd probably be the first quarterback taken. So, you know, this team's like the Browns and the Bills and the 49ers and the Bears now are all going to be looking for quarterbacks. So, you know, we'll see what kind of offers the Patriots get.
What do you think his value is right here, right now?
You know, I wouldn't take anything less than a first rounder for him. I mean, they spent a second rounder
really?
On
okay.
him. They've invested 3 years in him. You know, he's shown in brief windows that he can play in this league. So, you know, if you're a team out there that's looking to draft a quarterback in the first round this year, would you rather give that guy up and get Garoppolo, a guy that's 3 years into the league and knows the deal and has proven that he can perform at this level, or would you rather take a chance on a young rookie? I think that, you know, I'd rather go with Garoppolo if I was a GM.
Hey, just a few more minutes with Jim McBride from the Boston Globe tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We'd love for you to connect with us. Join us at Twitter, at eRadio Sports, and you can go back and listen to this entire interview with Jim McBride at our podcast page, and that is podcastarena.com, podcastarena.com. Just click on the Big E Sports Show. You know, I want to go back to the Super Bowl for just a minute. You know, when we think of that first half, the Patriots, obviously, they were not at their best. They failed to score, you know, early and often. You know, what kind of changes as we look ahead that might take place? So, you know, when we think about, you know, even offensively.
Well, I think that, you know, later on in the season that the Patriots became more of an equal balance team when it came to offense, passing and running. And I think that that's what you're going to see going forward. I'd be surprised if they didn't bring LeGarrette Blount back for another year. You know, he's had his best seasons as a Patriot. Had 1,200 yards last year. Then they really got an infusion midway through the season when Deion Lewis came back. Deion Lewis, who's never lost a game as a Patriot, I think he's 16-0 now, playing parts of last season and this season. So I think that you're going to continue to see that balanced attack where you kind of take the pressure off Brady, and if they can, you know, make some hay in the running game, it kind of opens things up on the outside for Chris Hogan and young Malcolm Mitchell. And, of course, they've got, Julian Edelman in the slot, who's probably the best slot receiver in the league right now and one of the best to ever play that position.
Hey, Jim McBride with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Only have time for one more question, and we've been talking about arguably the greatest dynasty when we talk about the New England Patriots. Talk to us about their head coach and Bill Belichick. What do you appreciate about him the most, and how has he throughout the years? I mean, how do you think he's evolved as a coach, Jim?
Well, I think he learned a lot from his first coaching stint in Cleveland. You know, when he got the second opportunity to be a head coach in the Patriots, I think he was more deliberate, more open to opinions of other people, and I think he values his staff. Not that he didn't in Cleveland, but I think he really values the opinions of his staff and his younger guys. And you know, one thing that I really appreciate from Coach Belichick is when you're there on a day-to-day basis. You know, I know a lot of people across the country will see the snippets of him on SportsCenter when he's, you know, maybe curt with a reporter or, you know, gives an answer, gives a really brief answer. But
right.
If you're there every day and, you know, you see him day after day, week after week, and you do your homework and you ask intelligent questions, you're going to get intelligent answers. And you have to know that when you ask him, like, injury questions, you're never going to get any information. You know, he goes strictly by the injury report. But the one thing that's great as a beat writer is Coach Belichick's Friday morning press conferences are almost like history lessons in football. You ask about a certain position,
yeah,
and he'll go way back to, you know, the early stages of football and give you examples that will fit perfectly with your question. And it's, you really tend to appreciate it. Sometimes you even forget that you asked the question because you get mesmerized listening to his answer and his just encyclopedic knowledge of the game. So that's been a real treat for me on my time covering Coach Belichick.
You will listen to The Voice, the Patriots beat writer with the Boston Globe. Jim McBride has been with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He teamed up with Triumph Sports and has released the new commemorative book. You got to go out and get a copy of it. It is titled Roger That. Congratulations. What a fun run. And hope to see you down here in Houston sometime. Thank you, Jim, so much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hard to believe it's already time to close out our show. That, of course, was Jim McBride with the Boston Globe. A very special thank you to all of our amazing guests and lineup. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports right here at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show.